Major sighting here.
It's all over the place.
Holy
Abnormal.
I see dead people walking around like regular people.
Paranormal. Somewhere between abnormal and paranormal.
I felt like something was near me, kind of a eerie feeling.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
Jeremy Scott asks the questions that we're all dying to know.
You can't handle the truth!
Hello? Hello?
You can't keep him down, no matter how hard you try.
Hey, that's the guy!
Traveling into the witching hour from the cold, dark depths of a secret dungeon somewhere deep in the remote Pacific Northwest, you're riding into the paranormal.
I consider it an honor every night, or at least one night a week now, that I can get behind this microphone and talk to a loyal audience about things that we all want to know. Is there life after death? Are extraterrestrials and aliens real? What really are those aircraft that are shimmying and shaking around our atmosphere? And so many other questions. The list goes on and on and on. Again, it's a pleasure to have you with me and together into the paranormal Saturday nights at this very spot. We've got the chat room into the paranormal.wix.com/ITP radio, where you'll get all the information on this program. I'd love to interact with you there. Tonight on the program, it is going to be one of those shows that I am well abreast of. I've done my research on this case. I know exactly what I'm talking about because I've talked with the three gentlemen who will be joining me tonight on many multiple occasions. And let's just say we hit it off from the start, and we've got some groundbreaking stuff to bring you tonight from the Washington State Poltergeist House case. And we'll have some special guests who will be checking in from time to time as well. But, you know, I always have my pulse on what's new, what's hot, what's going on in this world. And there's something a-brewing, of course. We know the terrorist attacks of the past couple of days, and it seems like every couple of weeks or every month we're talking about one of these, and we're all searching for answers, and we're wondering, well, how can we solve the issue at hand? How can we be, the savior? And the honest truth to that is, of course, we really can't. But, you know, I usually have my finger on the pulse of whatever it is happening in the world. If you're talking about it, I want to talk about it. Now, we have a number that you can join the program. It's 818-672-6865. That's 818-672-6865. Into Paranormal, you can Skype the program. Or if you go to the website, theparanormal.wix.com/ITP radio, or find the link on the Twitter or Facebook page, you'll be able to do that straightforward. Now, there's something out there, whether or not it's World War III or whether it's just another threat, I guess remains to be seen, but hundreds of military vehicles are taking part in exercises across Russia. Mobile intercontinental ballistic missile launchers are among these military vehicles. There's footage of these vehicles rolling through the woods of the Altay region. And, of course, in addition to that, there is, a threat that comes from a Russian diplomat that NATO will be punished and threatens nuclear war over exercises in Eastern Europe. So there's something on the horizon, whether or not it's World War III, like I said, or whether it's just people throwing out threats at each other. Nuclear war, not nuclear, is a very, very significant threat. Sergei Karaganov sits on the influential Foreign Policy and Defense Council of the Russian Foreign Ministry. All of this adds up to something is a brewing. Don't be surprised if you turn your television on tomorrow or maybe even next week and you see a nuclear war playing out across your television. Just keep an eye on that. If you don't know, well, now you know. And of course, if you've listened to me any length of time on any of these subjects, well, you know my take. I don't believe that we're going to get any sort of notice that the world might be ending. I just am not a thinker of that. It's going to happen. You and I are not going to survive, or we are going to survive, but there's not going to be any notice. So when we get a word of a prediction, another prediction, like the dozens upon dozens that have been made and then have fallen flat on their face throughout time. Conspiracy theorists, this, you can read the full story, by the way, into theparanormal.wix.com/ITP radio, my free website. Support us, and maybe I'll have my own domain soon. But you can read the story. It's courtesy of The Mirror out of the UK. July 29th, which means we have two more shows together, and then on that Friday evening, the world is going to end. That's the new apocalypse. Call me skeptical. Call me whatever. Just call me. The telephone number here is 818-672-6865. That's 818-672-6865. On the program tonight, it's going to be one of those shows that when you hear it, you're probably going to start to question what you may have heard elsewhere. Because many people know the guests that I'm going to be having on this program. Perhaps they've heard of the case, now known as the Washington State Poltergeist House, but also at one point in time known as the Demons in Seattle case, which was featured at one point in time on a television show. Not the best, but nonetheless, it was featured on a television show. The story that we're going to paint tonight is one of absolute authenticity, because this is a story that has been verified by now several experts in their field. Let me just paint this picture for you. Imagine you've picked out what you think is a perfectly normal home, one that you want to spend the rest of your life in, only to find out that it's haunted, and not just by friendly ghosts. Well, since buying a home in Bothell, Washington in 2012 and moving in with his girlfriend, Keith Linder has experienced just about everything imaginable, and yet he's still here standing. Tonight, it's an exclusive like nobody else can deliver on the Washington State Poltergeist House.
It was January 2016. We visited the home of Keith Linder. Keith was once again called upon our services, and we're back.
I've asked Don and Steve to return because there's been some new developments.
We are going to be beginning the investigation in about 10 minutes' time. I can tell you that already we have had some very significant things occurring.
As before, environmental monitoring equipment was set up, recorders were placed, and the rooms were sealed off.
We got a tripwire going off in the master bedroom.
And just like before, it wasn't long before inexplicable events began to unfold. We are still looking into why this picture would have left the wall at the same time the alarms were triggered.
Also coinciding with the alarm going off.
One of those events was these strange substances that began to weep down the walls around the house. Steve Mara takes a sample for analysis. Motion detection equipment on the landing was triggered, producing these very interesting anomalous images. Attentions were then drawn to the woods and the creek which lay beyond Keith's house. Once again, voices were captured, disembodied voices from here and from around the house. And this is just a few examples of the many, many recordings that were taken during the investigation.
So, let's speak.
Mm.
Those are some of the voices. Whether or not they are voices of the dead or not remains to be seen. We're going to delve very hard into this subject material tonight with my guests who are now joining me from literally every corner of the earth tonight. Keith Linder recently moved out of the home, by the way, after 4 years, and understandably so. He reached a point in time where he wanted answers, and so he turned to countless paranormal investigators, six other teams, in fact, but none of them had the answers that he was looking for until he met highly respected researchers Steve Mara and Don Phillips, who have more than 70 years of experience combined and have validated this story with not just one visit from the other side of the world, but two visits. And they're here tonight with the evidence. Steve Mara is a parapsychologist, a researcher, and a journalist with degrees in parapsychology, psychology, and electrical engineering. He's director of Phenomena Magazine and founded the scientific establishment of parapsychology. After experiencing a life of the paranormal, Don Phillips formed a group to not only investigate, but also offer support to people who believe they have experienced the effects of paranormal activity. He is also a television producer. And they all work together, Steve and Don, that is, on the Phenomena Project. Keith, Steve, and Don are back live to share new developments and evidence, including many never-before-played EVP recordings. Here we go. Welcome all three to the show.
Hello, Jeremy. It's Keith is here.
Keith.
Don. Hi, Jack.
And Steve, everyone's present and accounted for. It's great to have you all back here on the program. We're going to kind of start back at the beginning. Now, gentlemen, we've done several shows together, so I'm well-educated on your story, but many folks who are hearing this one tonight are not. And so some of the EVPs that we're going to be playing are back from day one, and I want us to start the story at day one. And so for that, we turn to Keith Linder. 2012, Keith, I mentioned you moved into this home with your girlfriend. And your first indication this property was haunted actually was as you were getting the keys and signing the paperwork, correct?
Yeah, that's correct, Jeremy. The kid cough that I often start this story off with is pretty much day one of, you know, you move into a house, you sign papers, you tour the insides, and you open up the bottle of wine, and you're sort of in a good mood, celebratory style. And me and my girlfriend were sitting in the den area. House is empty. The previous homeowner had left. And, yeah, we did hear a kid cough coming from a far room from the upstairs portion of the house. Me and my girlfriend heard it at the same time. Very distinct. Nothing you can get confused with other noise. But we didn't think paranormal that day. It was very odd that we would hear, you know, the sound of a kid coughing in a house that's empty. Obviously, we have no kids, and we were the only ones in the home at the time. But that would be the one event that started the subtle chain of events, because there was a buildup the entire summer of 2012.
Keith, did you ever think about changing your mind at that point in time and saying, you know, I haven't signed the paperwork yet, forget about it?
No, I would say there's been many moments of buyer's remorse or renter's remorse, in the sense of, you know, you see activity, your brain does two things with it, fight or flee. With me and Tina, it was so much, fight, stand your ground, hold your ground. This is my house. At that time, we didn't think it was malevolent, because it was basically cabinet doors, lights going off, footsteps, an occasional object being moved from left to right or from up to down. But you get buyer's remorse, especially when the activity begins to show signs of being malevolent. But by that time, we were a year and a half into the house.
And then a plant that was sitting right next to you. You were sitting down for an evening, and right next to the couch, this plant started to rise up and did almost a 360, Keith.
Yeah, that would be the time where, after previous subtle activity, the cat was out the bag. Then we definitely had something paranormal on our hands, because plants can't do that. They don't do that. No time of day of the week. This plant was sitting by the entertainment center,
And as we're watching a movie, it did levitate rather abruptly. It wasn't one of those slowly levitations, but it rose rather quickly. And then it did do a 360. Instead of lowering back down to its original position, it just fell over.
Okay, and then within weeks of moving in, you have things like items that disappear, others that you didn't even own start to appear, like children's toys. You'd wake up to find things like cabinet doors, even the front door, the garage door wide open. There were remnants of fires being set in the home, cryptic messages like 666, which was written in who knows what, on it looks like a closet door. There were scratches. Wine got spilled, dimes were falling from the ceiling, and the buttons on your shirt removed themselves. You also had contact with an apparition. Does that about sum everything up, Keith?
Yeah, that about sums up the greatest hits of the events in total. Yeah, the fires, the wall markings. Steve Attila, these are all hallmarkings of a poltergeist-like infestation. But slowly but surely, 2012 was the appearance of items that neither Tina or I owned. And then 2014 was the large objects being thrown. There was one fire out of my office, and there was the writings on the wall and in my office and the hallway. And you're right, there was a series of unexplainable events like dimes, coins coming from the ceiling, yeah.
And then in 2013, it kind of subsided. In 2014, though, you took a fall and actually tore a tendon and needed surgery for that. And during the surgery, this activity started to reoccur, Keith.
Yeah, it was during my rehab. There was a lull in 2013. There was a tapering off. And during that tapering off, me and Tina thought maybe the worst at that time being plants moving and loud bangs. We thought that was the worst, that it was behind us, that we may have dodged the bullet. The spirit might have just given up, being that we were still in the home. But, yeah, there was a weird fall, January 2nd of 2014, up in the middle stairway. And, yeah, I tore my right patella tendon. But during my rehab of being confined to my upstairs only because Tina still had to work, one of us did, I would stay primarily in the master bedroom and just go to and fro from master bedroom to office during my time off during rehab. And I would say there seems to be a noticeable coincidence of, as I'm doing my rehab and physical therapy, the activity did seem to return within weeks of that fall and during that rehab stage.
Keith, at what point did you consider reaching out for help?
Well, the fire that we had that did require the fire department of the city of Bothell coming into the house, we had always been reaching out to paranormal investigators locally, but more so as a FYI, you guys might want to investigate this to help us. But when the fire happened and my front door prevented me from getting out, it was forcibly shut, and I had trouble opening up the door. Tina had to make a U-turn. She had just left for work. After the fire department had left with an unexplained reason as to why a poster catches fire in an office on a clear spring day, me and Tina drove to the local parish within Bothell and sat in the office. We had had correspondence with the parish before, but we were just getting nowhere with them for about 6 months. But after the fire, we said we were not leaving their office until somebody could help us. And it was at that time the local parish did get involved.
The show Ghost Adventures didn't really do your case any good, did it?
No, Jeremy, they did it. And the reason why I say they did it is not because they did not find any evidence. Evidence is always elusive. But the portrayal of, due to the fact that they did not find any evidence, and this is not just my opinion, this is just from the opinions of many who don't know me from Adam after watching the show, they seem to, I guess, pin it on me and Tina as hoaxing, maybe over-exaggeration, maybe Tina being the causatory agent. It was a lot of variables, none of them favorably to us. And like I tell other people, we're just the house occupants. We buy a house, we rent a house. That happens every day. Couples move into houses every day. You can't fault us for going to investigators or people who are in the field who do this as a love for doing this, and then put the blame back on us. The blame should never be put on me and Tina for any investigation or investigators, including Ghost Adventures, for not finding evidence. Your goal is to find evidence and help us resolve a problem. And if you don't, that's fine. There's other avenues you can do. But don't make us look like we're lying, especially when you have no evidence or proof that we are lying.
And then you find Steve and Don, and they put you through some pretty stringent screening. Guys, why do you spend so much time on this case?
Well, initially, when Keith contacted the scientific establishment at Parasite Ecology, he mentioned numerous different things, which we do have an interest in, but we don't often just get up and fly 10,000 miles to the other side of the world on a case. I mean, we're very, with the car cases, are very specific about the case that we are involved in. We don't often get involved in cases that have had media involvement as well, and Keith's case had done, as obviously is well known. However, it was basically because of Keith's sincerity. Numerous tests were carried out unknown to Keith whilst we were doing video communications. He was actually going through some psychological profiling. So we needed to know, obviously, the sincerity of the witness before we were completely involved. And we took it from there. And, of course, you know, some of the findings were remarkable.
Absolutely. We're going to get into some of those findings, both from the first visit out there to Washington and then the second visit as well. Do we have Don Phillips with us as well from the UK?
I think he just disappeared offline trying to sort out his microphone.
I thought that was the case as well. I'm glad to have, though, Keith and Steve here, and we're getting ready for our bottom of the hour break. So we'll get Don's thoughts after we come back from the bottom of the hour. We've got lots of EVPs tonight, ladies and gentlemen, many of them. These, we're going to take you back to actually the beginning of when this case started. And when Steve Mara and Don Phillips first went out there to Washington, what they came back with was hundreds of EVPs. And we've got new ones as well tonight. It's an exclusive. You're hearing this stuff before anybody else is, right here on the show that's out there somewhere between abnormal and paranormal. I'll be right back.
You're riding into the paranormal. That we're all dying to know on Into the Paranormal.
Oh, we're getting you answers tonight, all right. to questions that you may not have even knew existed. Keith Linder, Steve Mara, Don Phillips, exclusive on the Washington State Poltergeist House case up in Bothell, Washington. Keith, details at all, ghostvictimexperiment.wordpress.com, theghostvictimexperiment.wordpress.com. You can search the Facebook site for the Washington State Poltergeist House. Steve Mara's website is zoharstargate.com, Z-O-H-A-R, stargate.com. And, of course, phenomenaproject.tv will put you in touch with Steve Mara and with Don Phillips. They're both with the Phenomena Project. And we have them all together through the power of the Internet for a program tonight that is probably going to blow your ears, maybe. But nonetheless, I think we have Don Phillips now joining us from the United Kingdom. Don, are you with us?
Good evening, Jeremy.
Hi, Don. It's good to have you on the program. As I was asking Steve right before the break, you guys have spent an awful lot of time on this case. It's about 9,000 miles to and fro, and you've done it twice now. Why do you guys, why are you so involved in this particular case?
Well, you know, Keith got a lot of flack. I mean, Keith, there's no doubt about it. Keith was making in the context of things, some massive, massive claims. I mean, we'd seen the stuff he put out, the stuff he sent us. Zach had been around there with the Ghost Adventures. Keith's reputation's really taken a dive. I mean, that in itself is obviously not enough. But the considerable amount we've spent in communication with Keith leading up to the case led us to think that, you know, there really could possibly be something very tangible. Yeah, I mean, there was enough there for us to go on, for us to think for it to warrant our visit, enough to spike our interest, shall we say.
But there was a lot of work that you did from abroad before you ever made the physical trip, like some pretty stringent screening to make sure that you know that Keith wasn't trying to pull one over on you.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, we had several communications over a long period of time. Different kinds of analysis, his behaviour, just all sorts. But Steve will tell you more about that in a minute, I'm sure. But we have to be stringent. We don't just jump on a plane because somebody says, you know, I've got ghosts or I've got a problem or, you know, I think my house is haunted. Obviously, there had to be something more to it than that. Keith's case was obviously very, very interesting to us. When he'd gone through all this psychoanalysis and everything, it all on the point scoring system, we was actually confused, to be honest, Jeremy, for a while, because Keith was coming across so sincere, and yet these claims were so huge. You know, we didn't actually know what the real situation was until we got there, obviously, because there is people out there that will go to any length for attention. We didn't know if that was the situation fully until we actually, arrived at Keith and began the investigation.
The first time you came out there, did you really know what you were up against?
Well, no, you can never know. I mean, Keith has supplied us with an awful lot of information. And as I mentioned to you, and I've mentioned several times before, we take that on board, but we can only go on what we find when we get there. We can't allow any additional information to sort of influence the way that we think. You know, we have to go on with a clear, open mind. You know, we can't allow anything to influence the investigation.
Stephen Dodd, what was the number one takeaway in your mind, that wow moment from the first trip out there to the Pacific Northwest?
Are you asking me or Steve?
Either one. You might have differing opinions on that. So, Don, let's get your take first, and then let's swing Steve's way.
Well, to be honest with you, for me, the wow moment was literally when I walked in the door at Keith. I mean, I'm very susceptible to what people would term spirit energy, but let's just call it energy for now. And literally, upon entering Keith, it was most apparent to me that there was an energy there, a very strong energy. I suppose the big wow moment was the first AVP that we captured. When I say AVP, I mean AVP, not EVP. We can go into more details later.
Actual voice phenomenon, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, actual voice phenomena. But I think that was the biggest wow moment. It certainly was for Keith as well, you know, because at the end of the day, that was Keith's first independent validation that there was actually something going on there.
Steve, what was the wow moment for you? Is Steve Mara still with us?
I think you will
okay,
be, Steve.
I'm here.
Oh, hi, Steve.
I assume the vocal responses coming straight out the air, the direct voice phenomena, DVPs, that we got, and there were about four on occasion on the first visit, which were clearly heard by myself coming out of thin air. No idea where they came from, how they were generated. Did not find a rational explanation for them. I can only assume to them to be unknown.
And we have many of those tonight, but we have many new ones as well. Why would you come back so soon, just even a couple of months later, early part of this year, based on the fact you had just been there and you had already come back with a boatload of evidence? Keith, was there something that happened that you had to call them back?
Yeah, Jeremy. When they left the first time, we stayed in communication, obviously. And there's, I guess, multi phases to an investigation. One is collect the evidence, then review it. But the root cause or the how to or what's causing it still is yet to be determined. When the guys got back to the UK and they're doing the analyzation of the current evidence, by no means does that mean the activity is going to stop. So when the activity was still going on and to some degree new phenomena picked up, these guys are the first individuals I emailed and called because the case is still classified as active. So, yeah, I would send them videos and emails to Don and Steve. And like I said, the root cause of investigating, is it the house? Is it the land underneath the house? They had put in petitions with the county records office. So it was time to retrieve that information as to the history of the land, the history of the county, the history of the house itself from a constructional point of view. And then, yeah, so that brought them back with a new phenomena and a need to try to analyze and ascertain why this is happening in the first place.
Yeah, so was there any background information, like maybe had somebody passed away there? Do we know anything? I know that there might have been, if I have this right, there might have been some Native American lineage there?
Yeah, we did find some historical piece information that ties several tribes, Skykomish, Nahomish tribes, to the city and the vicinity of Bothell. That may lead some credence to the Native American symbols that were written on the wall in the office. We also was able to uncover from the county records that there was a house that predated that house or that neighborhood. There was a cabin that used to live on that property ages back. Of course, it's hard to investigate something once it's gone, but these are all pillars of information that may or may not explain the reason for the activity. But you have to go through a lot of files. I was at the county records office signing away, requesting information about the city of Bothell, as well as that localized area of the home. Some of that information went to Steve directly, to SCP. And then when they look at all this information and Don and Steve came back, it was pretty much, we're more than welcome, or they're more than welcome to gather evidence anytime the entity offers it. And the entity did offer it on their second visit. But it was more so, okay, can we try to ascertain the root cause? And we'll, and Donna talk about why that's important, because he did venture into the creek which runs behind the home, behind the neighborhood, which has a water source.
Yeah, Don, your thoughts on that?
Sorry, what was that?
Creek. Keith was talking about the creek, the water behind the house.
Yeah, I mean, I covered the attic. I went on in the crawl space under the house and ended up going down the creek because that's the one area of land which is effectively undeveloped and probably, you know, not, well, been totally untouched. So if there's any kind of native tribal land or anything associated with that, I figured, you know, I might be able to get some responses or some information by venturing down there. And that's certainly what happened. One of the questions I asked, we got quite a lot of responses, but one that really stood out, it was very, very silent. I mean, we're talking about, what, maybe 2-3 o'clock in the morning. And I did actually say, if there's anybody whose remains may be here that's unknown, would you do the courtesy of giving your name? And a gentleman just, I wouldn't say he's Native American by the name, but he just called out Ray. I mean, it was so clear. And in direct response to the question, even Steve was quite taken back about that, you know, because it was literally, you know, what did you think of that, Steve?
Well, it was interesting because it wasn't the first time we had the name Ray pop up. It was also recorded inside Keith's house a little bit later on, I think a day later. So we had two, and it actually sounded like the same gentleman as well. All I can say is that taking in consideration the time, the location, and how clear the vocal comes through in proximity to the microphone, it come from an unknown source. I can't explain it.
And in relation just to one question and one answer, nothing before, nothing afterwards.
And then move-out day came. Keith had enough of this property. He had been trying to sell it for a while. How long had you been trying to get out of the home, Keith?
There was never me trying to get, you know, out of the home, except to say I wanted the home investigated and researched thoroughly before I got out. And once I had that information or got that ball rolling, then it was ample time to get out, to leave. That was May of this year. But it was never a sense of, run and, you know, I'll leave everything here and just run and start all over elsewhere. Even in 2014, and the activity was high, it was nerve-wracking. It was not easy to live or deal with. But keep in mind, this is a new house. It's 10 years old. It's a five-bedroom house, and it's going to always have family occupy it. And it just did not seem right for me to have a family come in and be unaware or do things that may proactively anger the spirits, because half of some of the phenomena that happened as far as Bible burnings and cross burnings and markings, some of that was my proactively being instructed to display religious objects as a way to ward off these spirits or to quiet them. It seemed to have the opposite effect. And that's going to be the reaction of any homeowner, because nobody knows this stuff. Nobody's born with paranormal information in their head. We only approach a situation based on our background and our belief system. And my belief system was to put a Christian element with the hopes of this Christian element running these things out of the house. It made matters worse, so I have no doubt that if anybody comes in the house new and have an object be thrown, they're going to do some of the same things that me and Tina did. But at least now we have a wealth of information, some more information to be coming, and maybe as an educational piece, sort of make the house livable, if not quiet, for somebody to live in.
So Keith has been in a new house for about the past 2 months, and we're going to ask him whether or not the activity has continued, whether it has stopped. Is it better or worse? Is it neutral? As far as move-out day, though, Keith, you know, we know that spirits don't like change. They don't like feeling like, you know, they're unsettled. You know, they have ties to properties and to people. Steve and Don weren't with you on move out day because of the distance between you three, but you had a recorder going and you captured many EVPs, which folks can check out on your YouTube channel, which I have linked up in the episode page. But more than 40 of those EVPs creepily said your name.
Yeah, and that's what I call putting a thought experiment to the test, because you're right. On move-out day, I had spent a week moving, and to my knowledge, spirits don't like change, and these spirits know I'm moving, I'm packing. But, I put a voice recorder on the counter, and I was just saying, I wonder what these spirits will be saying right now through the course of me moving and movers coming in here removing from. I wonder what their discussion is, because if you learn anything about Steve and Don's EVPs, especially the ones where they've caught by devices placed in the house, these spirits are conversating about anything real time. They're conversating about what Steve and Don or myself or Nick Kyle and others are doing, and that's what we capture on the EVPs. They're talking about current events. And the current events is us. So I put a recorder down, and I didn't listen to it for a while. It was probably about 2 weeks or so before I got settled in my new place, and I'm trying to play catch up. And I said, let me just put the headset on, and let me now see what I captured. And probably halfway through the video, and on the audio recorder, two devices captured the same EVP. There's a slow, drawn-out Keith whisper, then it's whisper, Keith, Keith, but it's all whisper, and then it starts ramping up in the sense of the time between the two Keiths are shortened by a second or less to where it was by 10 seconds or 15 seconds. And you hear this, and I counted between 35 to 40. After I got to 40, I just stopped counting.
Yeah.
There's others underneath my voice and the mover's voice. There's a, as they were grabbing my table, taking it out of the front door, there's an EVP where one of the voices says, watch out, which to me applies that the movers were either in their way or they were in the mover's way, because it's a very clear, distinct watch out. He's telling his partner or his other associate, and you hear the keys, and like I said, you've heard it. I gave it to other people, and yeah, that's, I mean, to me, that says a lot. That's a level of, number one, intelligence, a level of observation, a level of intent. You know, either we don't know what that intent means or is, but yeah, Keith, one syllable, 4 years. We know they know my name because I've lived there 4 years. They've written my name on the wall. They've written it in the office. They've written my initials in the office, in the hallway. And they've, so yeah, it's not far-fetched to me for them knowing my name or anybody's name for that matter, but to hear it 40-plus times repeatedly over and over, almost like a song, when it gets going and gets its momentum going. It lasts about a minute and a half.
And then, Steve or Don, do you have anything else to say about that?
Yeah, I think... sorry, there's quite a big echo on here. Is it just me that's getting it?
Yeah, I'm not sure why. I think it's because we're all trying to talk together at the same time. Hopefully that gets better. We can hear you, though, Don.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, obviously, I mean, like as Keith outlined, you know, he's got a lot of EVPs, but there will be a percentage of them that maybe not actually be speech. You know, it could be audio pareidolia. I'm sure there will be a percentage that can actually be put down to that. And this is where we can differentiate between EVPs and AVPs, because on an AVP, there's absolutely, well, it's not open to interpretation what's being said. And you'll also find that a large percentage of people that are listening without any prompting will be able to hear what's actually being said. But, yeah, well, was it, Keith? I know Keith did actually capture a lot of EVPs himself.
Steve, did you have any follow-up comments on that?
Well, obviously, SCP can only authenticate the ones we've captured under experimental conditions, but I've no doubt that Keith, on many occasions, was capturing some audible phenomena, because it was witnessed on numerous occasions whilst we were there, and that was during our experiments.
The story of the Bible, Keith, I have a clip that I want to play from Carissa Fleck, who actually had that Bible in her hands, and something happened to that Bible right around the time you moved out of this property that we're talking about tonight, the Washington State Poltergeist House. But first, give us some background on that Bible, please.
Well, there's three Bibles, and... there's three Bibles. The first Bible, I believe the one you're referring to that Carissa has, that's the first Bible that went missing in 2012, that reappeared in 2014. First Bible to be burned, and upon her departure, when she came, I let her leave with that Bible. The other two Bibles, I still have one. It's in my safe, and Nikki Unparanormal has the... Nikki has the other Bible, and I was informed recently that the one Carissa possessed, that she kept in a case, has went missing in and around the time that I moved from point A, being the old house, to point B, which is my new home.
Yeah, I want folks to hear what Carissa had to say. So let's go to that.
The Bible in my possession was actually the one that went viral on the videos moving and talking. I had moved it from my barn because it had a leak where I was keeping it, and I put it into my office. It was then that my animal started getting sick. So I took it out of my house immediately, and my animals got better. I had kept it in my trunk of my car as a safe place just in the meantime until I could get that leak fixed in the barn. I went to look for it yesterday, and I noticed that it was missing. It was then that I talked to Keith, and he told me the house is back on the market. You know, I can't say for sure that it's paranormal, but it's pretty strange because I know that no one's had access to my car and not my trunk at all. I mean, that's impossible to get to. You actually have to use my key to get into that trunk.
Stephen, John, is that something that's possible, given your expertise?
I couldn't actually hear anything playing there, Jeremy, my end, to be honest.
Oh, okay. Well, basically the story is that Keith gave her a Bible, and it disappeared right around the time that that Keith moved out of the property.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's very, very difficult. I mean, we can only, like Steve's already outlined, we can only really validate or comment on things that took place whilst we was there during our investigation. And the Clarissa investigation, what she did then, what we did, is totally unrelated, and so is the evidence. Well, you know, we're not there. We wasn't there to clarify anything. We're not been there to test anything. So I can't actually comment on that, not actually being there at the time.
Keith, your thoughts on that? Do you think it was related or was it coincidence?
Well, my date I moved out was May the 8th and the 9th. That was my last day in the home. I don't know the exact date that Carissa says her Bible, the Bible went missing, because I just found out about that yesterday. But I can tell you, I mean, just not, and I'm not talking about this case in particular. I'm just talking about cases as a whole or questions that the paranormal community has, is of objects, you know, disappearing, reappearing. I mean, we're talking about a huge, well, if it disappeared, then it's just the same as if the Bible's disappeared in my home. It's not so much a fantastic idea to contemplate, because I know for a fact three Bibles have disappeared in my home, but it does make the case interesting. I have no reason to doubt it based on the fact that, you know, it was a Bible that disappeared numerous times before. I've seen my Bibles disappear several times, and I still have two Bibles missing. There are two Bibles that I never collected in the home that I just left, that maybe one day they may reappear. They may reappear with the current homeowners.
The story of the Washington State Poltergeist House continues with Keith Linder, the property owner, and two well-respected researchers from the UK. We've got Steve Mara and Don Phillips, and we'll continue right after this. You're listening to Into the Paranormal. I'm Jeremy Scott.
Major sighting here.
It's all over the place.
Holy
Abnormal.
I see dead people walking around like regular people.
Paranormal. Somewhere between abnormal and paranormal.
I felt like something was near me. Kind of a eerie feeling.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
Jeremy Scott asks the questions that we're all dying to know.
You can't handle the truth!
Hello? Hello?
You can't keep him down, no matter how hard you try.
Hey, that's the guy! And he's back for more!
Traveling into the witching hour from the cold, dark depths of a secret dungeon somewhere deep in the remote Pacific Northwest, you're riding into the paranormal.
What do you think? Was the Bible just an act of coincidence? Did it have something to do with the moving of Keith Linder away from the property? Keith is joining us from the Pacific Northwest, where it's perfect summer weather. Not so much in other parts of the country. You know, I came from Texas, and that was not perfect weather. But Oregon has perfect summers, and so Keith and I share that. He's about probably about 3.5 hours north of from where I am right now, up the I-5 corridor, somewhere up in near Bothell, Washington. And, of course, joining us in the middle of the night, I think it's 4 a.m. For Don. What time is it for you, Steve?
Say that again, Jeremy. You were breaking up a little bit.
Oh, what time is it for you?
It's 4:07 in the morning.
Oh, yeah. So still 4 in the morning. So are you guys used to the late night hours?
No, doing paranormal investigations for 33 years, I'd say, yeah.
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 So bedtime's what, sometime around 7 a.m.?
Well, bedtime's when your eyes close, I think. I mean, there's 24 hours in our day.
Yeah.
Know, literally.
We're going to get into EVPs very, very quickly here, rapid fire. We've got many of them. Don's provided with me some today that were from previous in the investigation, so we can get you caught up on the full scope of this case. And Keith's provided some new ones as well. If you've heard of the previous programs on this case, you're going to hear some new stuff tonight, so keep it right here. Talking about the move, Keith Linder moves from a haunted property up in Bothell, Washington, after 4 years. And, Keith, we talked about during the move 40 EVPs at least that said your name. We know that the Bible somehow went missing during the move. Anything else happen?
Well, on day one of the new house, there was a weird water leakage from the ceiling onto my kitchen table. I'm talking about the new house. I have tenants upstairs now. I'm in a condo, 4-unit condominium. And this is about 5:30 in the morning on a Monday, getting ready to go to work. And so anytime you have water leaking anywhere, especially the ceiling, that's almost a DEFCON 4. So I got the maintenance over here. I got the plumber over here immediately. There's no water source in my unit that could turn off. But upon the maintenance and the plumber's investigation of source of water, I ran up to the neighbor, my upstairs neighbor, to see if they left a faucet on, a bathtub, a sink, a spilt aquarium. All answers are officially no. And the maintenance man, the plumber, could not find no source of the water. There's no pipes. That's a code violation. So obviously there's no water pipes between my floor and the floor above me. But nothing since then has happened. I put that in the category of weird. The next move is whoever caused that. It's their next move. But
nothing. During the move itself, nothing as you were moving besides the EVPs that you witnessed later as you were moving from point A to point B?
No. It's been, I mean, keep in mind, I breathe out a sigh of relief living in this new house because every time I was living in that old house, there's always footsteps. There's always sounds of somebody in a room that I'm not currently in. And there's always a pacing back and forth of the hallway, of the landing, of the staircase. I have none of that here. And it's almost what they, you know, when you have that scenario of 4 years of living with that, even when you go to bed. But none of that is here now. I don't make it a habit of looking for activity, of having just an overall paranormal paranoia, if you will. Even though I've lived and seen a lot, but I'm not blind either. I can pretty much tell the difference just by instinct alone. And I do know what's peculiar and what's not peculiar. But as of now, nothing abnormally has been peculiar except the periodic EVPs and the bed phenomena of the bed shaking and the occasional yanking of sheets and pillowcase.
Yeah, and actually the next morning, so May 17th, you woke up right around the same time as you found the water dripping mysteriously in a place you just moved into. Very next morning, about the same time, you get up to go to work, and you find out that your car battery is dead. This was a pretty much brand new car, Keith.
Yeah, this is the white car that both Steve and Don rode in, and they could attest to it being new. But yeah, the battery was dead. I view that as a, like I said, very peculiar. Of course, batteries die all the time. But it was very, I always looked for timing. It was less than 24 hours after the water incident. And it did cause me a half a day of missed work, being that, number one, I had to get AAA out to my house to jump my car. I have to go get the battery tested to see if it's not a bad cell. So all that stuff I draw, these are just inconveniences. Like I said, when I was living in the home, or when me and Tina were living in the home, you know, keys missing momentarily to make you late for work, but your car keys reappear, you know, anything to sort of trip you up. So yeah, it was weird, but I've had car batteries die on me before, but this is just weird. Number one, brand new car, therefore brand new battery in the car. But, you know, it's just one of those things, undetermined, because it could be a numerous number of reasons, but it was just weird. And like I said, I wait. The next move is on any spirit or entity, unless something goes flying or moving that defies all logic and reason, that defies the laws of gravity. I have to currently, as of right now, leave it in the to-be-determined category, except the bad stuff, because the bad stuff are identical as they were at the other house.
Yeah, so the shaking and the moving of the bed, the tugs at the pillow, like he said, the poking and the prodding while sleeping, and even an occasional whisper in the ear of your name while you're sleeping, those would be a little bit too much for me to handle, Keith.
Yeah, but dude, I can't move to a third place. I can move to Antarctica.
But I don't know, Steve and Don, would moving to another place even help him?
Do you know what? Excuse me, John. There is an awful lot of houses and establishments with spiritual activity going on that people are not even aware of. So moving house is never any guarantee that you're actually going to, you know, leave everything behind. And I know people naturally assume that they've been followed and everything, but like I say, I mean, there's a lot of places that have got some kind of spiritual activity going on.
Steve, what do you say? Is it harder than it sounds to keep this activity from following you?
Not always necessary. I mean, sometimes when it is a poltergeist infestation, there are certain things that an establishment can do in regards suppressing certain paranormal phenomena, especially when it's directly associated to vexation cycles that are taking place in the home. When it's a haunting, it's usually a little bit different. That's usually a location. I mean, it's just like, for instance, you could have a paranormal location and build a house on it, and it's like capturing a fly in a glass. Sometimes, you know, it's not always as simple as trying to assist people to defuse the situation, you know, especially when it's a haunting. But in Keith's case, what was very unusual was that we had what can only be assumed is a very similar to poltergeist infestation, but with a haunting condition at the same time. And it's very, very rare he come across cases like this. And this is why we found it so interesting.
Keith,
I think
are you
the,
kind
the
of
thing as well?
Go ahead, Don.
I was just gonna mention. I think the thing that people should bear in mind as well, the more attention you pay to something, then the more attention you're going to attract. You know, if you move house, and let's say you move for your previous property was deemed haunted, and you move into a new house, I mean, you're constantly looking for things, and with spirits, the more attention that you pay them, then obviously the more attention, like I said, that they you're going to attract.
Keith, are you kind of left holding the bag on this property right now?
Which one? The current property or the former?
The former.
No, I'm not. No.
That's good.
No.
Is there an opportunity that you would entertain going back there, considering that some of the same activity is happening in the current place as well, or is that not even crossing your mind?
No, I would go back, but the only conditions, I mean, for lack of a better word, the only conditions I would go back is the tenants that currently live in the home, if they were to have activity anywhere near like me and Tina did, and they needed dire help. I'm going to pivot them to Steve and Dawn. So, yeah, I would go back, because keep in mind, one of the things that I did not know, and Tina did not know, was previous tenants in the home had activity, but, you know, we're siloed off. Each house tenant is siloed off from the next house occupant. Two families just up and moved. Most people do that. They just up and move and take their experience with them. It's intelligent to assume that had I known the house had activity when moving in it, I have two choices, stay. And then also if I choose to stay, I need to utilize mitigation means to not let the activity get as drastic as it got to. But yeah, I would go back. I would not like to leave anybody in the situation that me and Tina were in, because we were cut off for help for 3 years. I mean, 3 years being without help, spinning your wheels, making it up as you go, helps the entity out, helps the spirits out, but you use a lot of sleep out of it, me and Tina do, and there are other repercussions that we faced as a result of that. But I gave some information to the home owner, and I gave some information in the sense that, my opinion, this thing may lay low. It may sit a year or two out. And talking with Steve and Nick, Kyle, and Dawn, if the activity is minimum to a level one, most of the times an average family is going to not even notice it, you know, unless the spirit just wants to ratchet up to get extreme attention. Mm-hmm. So hopefully the activity is at a bare minimum to where it goes unnoticed. But in the event that it does, nobody deserves to be struggling. They need to hit the ground running. And there's information, there's Steve and Dawn, who have their research, who have their organizations, and we can still provide help, because, like I said, the ultimate goal is to make the house livable, as well as determine what and why caused all of this. And it might take some time. This is not nothing one should think is going to take months. It may take years to figure this out.
Hey, Keith, did you see that story on the news last night of a home that was well, it didn't look like anything I would ever want to live in. It was all graffitied up, and it went for nearly $500,000.
No, I missed that one.
Well, my point is, you know, there are people who will pay nearly $500,000 for, I guess, just the land, not considering the home that's sitting on it. And there are actually some people who like living in haunted properties. Did the people who bought this home that you lived in buy it on those pretenses?
Well, the house is still for sale right now, so right now it hasn't been bought. It only went on the market recently.
Oh, gotcha, gotcha.
But I do know that, yeah, there are people that buy haunted houses. There are people who pay to live in them or treat it as a bed and bath. I would never do that for the spirit's sake and the home people's sake, even though they say they want it. But in talking with the owner, I know that was not an avenue that he was pursuing, even though he knows all the activity. I think he saw this as a good time to pivot, if you will, and the economy being, especially in Bothell and Seattle, it's a home buyer's market right now. So I think his mindset is count your blessings, get going while the going is good. But I'm always worried about the house occupants, because me and Tina didn't have kids, and if we had children, there's no way we would have stayed 4 years in the house had we had children. Mm-hmm. But another family is going to come in there that wants to start a family or have a pre-existing family. And like I said, my fingers are crossed that they don't have activity. But in the event that they should, and some of it turns malevolent, then they have to be able to pivot to an organization like Steve and mm-hmm. Dawn's, because if you go to the wrong paranormal group, they will just make matters worse. And some of the teams that I went to locally did have a hand unwillingly, unknowingly, did make matters worse.
Yeah, I mean, why start over in the sense that Steve and Dawn have done a lot of the legwork? They know exactly what we're dealing with here. EVPs, I want to get into those right now. I know many folks are listening because they like to hear electronic voice phenomenon recordings. Steve, what are EVPs? What's the thought on what an EVP recording is? Is it a voice of somebody who's passed?
Well, initially when the phenomena was noted under parapsychological terms, it was referred to as ITC, instrumental transcommunication, and that was utilizing radio rigs and televisions and numerous different things many years ago. And there were some interesting evidence that suggests that some people were communicating with, well, unknown intelligent sources. The communications were referred to as direct, and it was very interesting, some of those responses. As time's gone on and equipment and technology has advanced, the terminology changed to electronic voice phenomena, which, you know, utilising pieces of electronic equipment, usually digital recorders now, to capture what people refer to as EVPs. However, we've actually gone one further than that, is that the actual recordings on some of the investigations that Phenomena Project has actually continued to do over the last 2 years, Keith being one of the most significant, they've been two different forms. These are AVPs, actual voice phenomena. And in some cases, with actual voice phenomena, you can ask questions and gain responses. In fact, you can get quite a number of answers to the questions you give. It gives a great opportunity to finding out certain things. Also, direct phenomena, which is, you know, direct out of the air. Now, the DVPs, they don't happen as often. But even in Keith's case, I think on the first visit, there was four direct voice phenomena out straight out of the air. And it's not called EVP because there's no electronics required. There's no equipment required. It's just caught straight out of the air, and we hear it as it happens, as well as the recording devices. It's a fascinating subject, and we can only assume. I don't like to label things. And a lot of people say, yes, spirit communication. But as far as I'm concerned, they're intelligent, they're communicating, they give reference to the name and you know, their surroundings and questions that we ask. But it's always been a bit of an unknown to me. But it is fascinating that we are directly communicating with, I can only assume, is, you know, it is a form of spirits, but mm-hmm. it's just difficult to put a label on it.
Don, your thoughts also on EVPs are, what are they?
Yeah, well, what I was going to say is, you know, we've got this definition for many, many years now, EVP, electronic voice phenomena, but under its basic definition, or under the official definition, what you're actually referring to is, you know, it's unintelligible speech, it's ambient sounds that resemble speech, and it's just everything pointing to the fact that it's not speech. That's what an EVP is. An EVP, in its proper definition, is not speech. It is ambient sound that sounds like speech. But this EVP label has been used to cover absolutely everything. And I decided some time ago that we needed another criteria. So that's when I came up with the AVP. When you've got voices coming out of the air, when you've got voices which are clear speech that everybody can hear in response to questions, conversations, obviously it needs a different definition. An AVP has got to be clear speech, it's got to be in direct response to a question. You've got to be able to hear it, play it back instantly on the spot. I don't mean take it away and put it through a laptop, put it through sound filters, just literally as it's recorded and instantly played back. And it's got to be more than one word, you know. So there's a big difference between an EVP and an AVP. So that's why I came up with the definition of AVP. And a lot of people are now actually adopting AVP now.
We're actually going to hear some differences here. So this is one of the EVPs that Don said over this afternoon. We're just going to play it. I usually like to play these and not tell people what it is they're going to hear and have them use their own judgment. And then we'll get kind of the round robin, round table thoughts on what it is exactly that was said. But this is one of those, I guess it's right between an EVP and an AVP. Now that's... Those are voices. You can't really hear what is being said, but in this one, you certainly can.
So, let's see.
So that's kind of what we're talking about, right, Don?
That's, well, yeah, to be honest, I didn't actually hear anything this end when you're playing, so I'm not sure what's actually happening there. I don't know which ones that you just played.
The one which is the voices of people talking, and then the one that said two of us speaking.
Oh, yeah, I mean, without doubt, you know, that is speech. It's not something that sounds like speech. That is speech, you know.
This next one, as we're going to hit our bottom of the hour break, but the guys will stay with us through the final commercial break and come back for a final half hour of this Into the Parabnormal. I'm Jeremy Scott. Keith Linder, Steve Mara, Don Phillips are with me tonight. The Washington State Poltergeist House case, the exclusive right here. And this next EVP was actually sent over by Don as well. And Don, I'll let you give us some background on this one. This is one where you're actually trying to communicate with a spirit and ask this entity whether or not they're here to harm Keith.
All right, yeah, that's right, yeah.
So let's hear that response.
Okay, guys, can you please confirm for me the buffer case we've just done, that there is nothing negative and nothing there to harm or the intent of harming Keith Linder now? Thank you.
Now, the first time I heard that, I thought it said something in the sense of "I can't," but it the more I listen to it, I hear "I confirm." I confirm, as if they're there to harm Keith, or they're not.
Yeah, what's interesting on that is the phrase used, because the question was, "Can you confirm?" And the actual response was, "I confirm." You know, so it was literally exactly what I asked for. But you've got to understand as well, this is not unique to Keith. I mean, this is something that I've done for a very long time. I mean, Steve will tell you more about that shortly, I guess. But the way I communicate with spirits, it's very, very effective, and that's the kind of responses that we get on a regular basis. But it's certainly very, very helpful when you're actually conducting investigations.
We'll take a break and we'll come back more with Keith Linder, Steve Mara, and Don Phillips. It's our exclusive tonight on the Washington State Poltergeist House. If you have any questions or any comments, I would welcome your input. We have a toll-free number. Well, it's not toll-free, but it, you know, everybody has a cell phone these days. 818-672-6865. That's 818-672-6865. You can Skype into Parabnormal. From the cold, dark depths of a secret dungeon somewhere deep in the remote Pacific Northwest, our final half hour right after this.
You're riding into the Parabnormal.
Something about that just sounds wrong. Into the Parabnormal. That's better. Jeremy, take it away.
Yeah, we're in the final half hour. It's been a program to set the stage from the beginning to the end. It's not over, though, for Keith Linder. This is not something that's just going to end once this program is done. If there is somebody who takes over the property, if there is somebody who eventually moves in to that house, that Keith once lived in. His work is going to continue, and perhaps so might Steve Mara and Don Phillips' work continue, because should there be additional activity in this house, well, I'm sure that that Steve and Don will be brought in for their expertise. I mean, they're the ones who have been working this case since the beginning, and we've been playing some EVPs, electronic voice phenomenon, and actually got a nice lesson on the origins of EVPs and kind of how they've changed over the years. But the premise pretty much is the same, which is that you put a recorder out and you're trying to capture, in some cases, a response from a spirit. In other cases, you're just trying to record voices. As far as recording these, if there are some folks out in the audience, and I know there are, who might want to record themselves some EVPs, maybe if they, you know, believe that they are at a haunted location, or if they want, they have the guts to go to a haunted location. Steve, what is the best device to try to record one of these?
The best device to capture what?
To capture an EVP.
The best device to capture that depends on. Hands it thing. I mean, I don't believe there is a best device to capture EVP. What people don't realise that it isn't the actual equipment; it's the person utilising the equipment. That is the optional thing. Yeah.
In a little bit of interference there, I'm not sure. Hopefully, that's why I think Steve was having a hard time hearing and probably talking through that. What does Don Phillips have to say about the best kind of device to capture an EVP?
Well, as regards, if you're talking voice recorders, I'd always say Olympus, but I've always used Olympus, and they're actually my sponsors because I've been very successful with them, and they recognise that and the potential. But like Steve said, I mean, I get people all the time saying, "What recorder have you got?" Because they expect they can just get the same recorder, go out, and get the same results, but it really doesn't work like that. You know, a lot of it, there is part of it is that it's to do with, well, the individual, like Steve said, you know.
Let's pick back up with the EVPs. I have these probably numbered a little bit out of order. Let's just go ahead and play this one here. And we'll let the audience hear it for themselves. Keith, do you remember that one, I Want More?
Yeah, that was one that Don captured. I believe that was the crawl space of somewhere secluded in the house, the I Want More.
That was
the first visit. Yeah, crawl space, first visit. Yeah, I remember that one very instinctively because it was associated with a few of the other EVPs as well as the I Confirm.
I guess it remains to be seen what more actually is. The next one, there is some sort of a response here, like an introduction or something of the kind.
Hello.
Yeah. There you have it, a subtle hello. Steve and Don, do you have background on that one? Were either of you near at the point that was captured?
I remember exactly when that was captured. That was whilst Don was under the crawl space for about 20 minutes. I was actually walking around the house above him, trying to locate the presence, whereabouts he was underneath me. He came up from the crawl space with numerous different recordings, and that was actually one of them, which was quite surprising.
Your take on that one, Don, since you were the one actually in that crawl space, did that make you a little bit more spooked that you were actually down there at the time that this EVP was captured?
No, it didn't spook me at all. I get these things all the time, this kind of phenomena, and at that level, so to me it wasn't a problem at all.
I think at this point it's really good to point out that the fact is that why we utilised Don on these investigations, when SCP was contacted to go over to Keith's house to conduct this investigation,
Have we lost Steve?
I guess we lost Steve. We still have Don. Keith, you still with us?
Sorry, guys. I just dropped out a little bit there.
Okay, Steve. Yeah,
Keith is here. I'm here.
You were saying, Steve.
Yeah, I was just explaining what's important is that we utilise Don Phillips as a catalyst. He's a specialist in paranormal phenomena. That basically would mean that he has a great knowledge of parapsychological and paranormal techniques, equipment, the process of investigation, the process of research and analysis. And most of all, we utilise Don on these cases because he is a catalyst. He is somebody that seems to attract, have connections to the paranormalities that take place in certain places. And that seems to be advantageous when it comes to evidence and documenting.
I'm going to do a separate show with each one of you. I want to do a show with Steve Mara because there's so much of his story that we haven't been able to share. And there's so much of Don Phillips' story as well that we haven't been able to share. But Don, since he referred to it there, why is it that you have this ability? Are you able to know the answer to that question?
Yeah, there's certain things that I'm not limited to sort of discuss, Jeremy, at the minute, which is really hard to explain. One thing what I will say is it's not just a case of picking up EVPs or AVPs on a record and saying, look what we've got. I mean, these things are very, very strictly analysed, you know, the frequencies, you know, the hertz, where they fall between and everything else. So I am very fortunate to be able to do what I do, and it works.
Mm-hmm. I mean, for us, Jeremy, it's about evidence at the end of the day. On the first visit, just myself and Don were involved, after which, I mean, we basically, you know, we really clouted it the second time. We had Jenny Ashford, who was documenting for me in the background. We had Brian Allen, who was doing research. We had Nick Kyle. Not only is Nick Kyle an investigative researcher, but he was there as an independent observer. Now, Nick Kyle is the president of the Scottish Society of Psychical Research. And taking in place, obviously, we had SCP, myself. It was involved in our organisation. Don Phillips as well, that was along with us. And somebody else that was monitoring this on the sidelines from SCP was Robert Young, who's also a parapsychologist with the Office of Parapsychological Studies. So it's a matter of accumulating that evidence and putting it out to people. And what was good about doing Keith's case was it was all video documented, all the evidence as it happened there and then, which is going to go out as a documentary, which Don will be putting out in the near future. I'm sure people will find that absolutely fascinating. And the good thing about this is that this is true paranormal phenomena as it's seen, as it really happens, and it's the first time of its kind that a TV show like this has actually been manufactured. So we should get a really good response from the people in regarding Keith's case.
I mean, the other thing is as well, which I think it's quite ironic, and I said to Steve earlier, how far do people want to go? Despite me and Steve and our backgrounds being what we did and what we produced, and the fact we make our evidence available to any other scientific body or anything that wants to check it for themselves. The feedback, I mean, most of it was absolutely positive, but there was still quite a lot of people that was saying things like, oh, you know, he must have fooled them and Keith put speakers up and everything else. People still didn't believe what we was putting out. So therefore, we had Nick Kyle join us as an independent observer. Mm-hmm. So, and I said to Steve earlier, where do you stop? Because what do we have to do now? Recruit somebody else to oversee myself, Steve and Nick Kyle? You know, you've got to draw the line somewhere. If the evidence's been collected, it's been analysed by three separate institutions and made available to everybody else. You know, at some point, you've got to say, you know, there's something going on, rather than just deny everything all the time, which some people will do. You know, you've got to be open-minded. You can only be objectional to a certain point for so long before you have to admit, okay, we don't know. Anybody could just say, okay, we don't want to necessarily believe it's spirits. We don't know what it is, but there's got to be something happening. And you know what? That's good enough for me.
Yeah, I mean, it's good enough for me as well. I mean, we were quite, you know, we were very stringent regarding our operations that took place at Keith Lynch's house. We even got an on-site locational assistance, which was Patty Hale, who lived locally, and she assisted us through the investigation, and she was au fait with the location as well, which was good. And all together, you know, the amount what we came back with was remarkable. 427 recordings, you know, in total, with 236 gigabytes of information. On the second visit, we've got not only a picture that seems to have dropped mysteriously from the wall, vibration detectors that seem to manifest themselves a foot away from the bed in alert mode, strange photographs of shadow figures. You know, it was just a remarkable amount of phenomena taking place in such a little time.
Is there anything that might happen that would draw you back out to Washington to investigate Keith's new property?
Dom?
Is there anything that happened to bring us back out again? Is that the question?
Yeah, if something happened, would you entertain coming back again?
Well, I think in relation to the property that Keith left, if a family moved in with children and there was anything really, well, unpleasant going on, I'd feel kind of duty bound to try and get back over there to see what I could do.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's certainly assist as much as we possibly can. What we do, or what we are slightly lacking, is further assistance in America regarding some academics, some scientists that could get behind and help
absolutely.
Us with the analysis. We're definitely looking for extra assistance with this because it's an overwhelming amount of evidence. And simply, you know, the actual amount of time it's involved analysing is very, very difficult.
And the other problem we've got is, you know, there's this deep divide, you know, between sort of scientists and what you call citizen scientists. And the scientists, the professional scientists, they think that, well, yeah, it's very complicated to explain. They seem to think that entering into civic debates undermines objectivity, which is not the case. And you know what? We need to work together because the truth, Jeremy, the plain truth is most of the research, in fact, probably, I don't know what percentage, but most of the research that's done, real research, is done by people like me and Steve,
mm-hmm.
you know? And we need to get the mainstream scientists on board.
Certainly is the real deal. Now, we're going to get to some EVPs that Keith submitted. So, Keith, the batch that you sent over, were those recorded while Steve and Don were there, or are those ones that you found on your own? Because I know you're becoming quite the novice.
Yeah, what I did, these are EVPs that I found while Steve and Don were there. So some of these are on their own equipment because they had equipment running 24/7. Steve and Don did. But Stephen Dahl, or Steve's especially, he takes it back to SCP and does analyzation. Me, I'm ready. I take my voice recorder, plug it into my laptop, and do immediate listening to. So that's some of what I've sent you was a lot of the EVPs, because when they're working during their work, I'm at home. I'm working from home that week, and I'm just sort of shadowing them. Because I'm curious about the subject in a sense of being the house occupant. I live here. What are these things saying? Why are they saying it? So that's what I sent you, maybe two or three other ones I found compelling while Steve and Don were here the second time.
Where's the camera? The editor?
Yeah, it's over there. Did you hear me, Jeremy?
Yeah, so Keith, we were just hearing one of those EVPs there, and that was one. There's a little bit of groaning in it, and it sounds something like, I thought I saw it.
Yes, that's a good one in the sense of there's a video. That EVP was captured on three devices. It was a late night, must have been after 3 a.m. We're all huddled in the kitchen. Don had not too long got back from the creek, and two voice recorders catching the same EVP. And then there was a recording device, a video device, a GoPro that captured and video the EVP. So, yeah, the I thought I saw it. We all looked at that and re-listened to it. Nick Kyle, who's from Scotland, listened to it and was able to acknowledge and verify it. And we all had semi-reactions to it, number one being that That's a voice phenomenon.
Gentlemen, what do you see on this video? Because as Keith mentioned, two voice recorders and one video recorder. Can you see an EVP much the same as you can hear it? Like when we hear one of these recordings, you know, we hear different voices that don't add up as far as other people who were there. But on video, what are we looking for to distinguish where the sounds of an EVP might come from?
Do you want me to answer that, Steve, or do you want to answer that?
You answer it, yeah.
Okay, so you're talking about the difference between EVP, AVP on a voice recorder as opposed to a video?
Correct,
Was that the question?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, okay. Well, first and foremost, I mean, if you're using sort of video recording equipment and you catch an EVP or AVP, you're not going to get the static because video cameras do not pick up static.
Yeah.
So obviously it makes them a lot easier to hear, even if they're low, a lot easier to analyse, because even though it's on a video camera, it's still going to be within a certain frequency. My favourite recordings are the ones that I actually pick up on the night vision camera, to be honest with you, because simply for the fact there's absolutely no static.
Keith, let's have you tell the story of what happened when you borrowed your friend Patty's truck. And then we'll hear the EVP that comes as you're telling this story. Folks can go to Keith Linder's YouTube channel by clicking the link in the episode page for tonight's program. But Keith, let's have you tell us about that occurrence.
Yeah. So prior to Steve and Don coming the second time, I was in my office one day, and I noticed. There's a portion of my office closet door that still had some of the remaining markings that the entity did a few years ago that was not painted over. We missed it their first go around, so I emailed Steve and Dawn and told Patty that, hey, let me just take this door off its hinges. I have nothing better else to do, and let me just run it down the street to the paint store, because when I started buying paint to paint over the damage to my house, I realized that the painters have technology to where they can match paint almost to a T regards to guessing what sort of paint you used previously. So I took the door. I didn't have a truck. Patty's a close friend. We loaded the door into the truck. It's about a mile away, the store is. And so we took the door to the store. And upon coming back from the store, because the painters could not recognize or tell what sort of paint that was, so we felt it a mission failure. But something interesting, as we're getting back to my house and in the driveway, I'm removing the door from Patty's truck, and there's a cover over the flatbed of her truck, and she sees these markings on the ceiling of the cover, which is facing inside the truck bed. And upon looking at these markings, they eerily resemble the markings on the door that I'm holding and the door and the markings of the office that are many pictures of that many people have seen. And once again, we both pull out our cell phones, not to capture EVP, mind you. We pull out our cell phones to capture, to send these markings to her husband because it's his truck. And she texts him these pictures. And he replies, no, those markings were not on my truck ever or prior to you going to Keith's house. So when I download the video off my phone and re-listen to it, that's where we pick up the EVP of, hey, and it's very distinguished, it's very clearly heard, and it's between me talking and Patty talking.
All right, hang tight, guys. We're going to hear it. Let the audience hear it.
These markings are black. They're dots, they're streak in nature.
There you hear it three times. Hey, hey, hey. So there was somebody there. That wasn't Patty's voice, was it, Keith?
No, that was not Patty's voice, because Patty's talking when the hey comes in. It's not my voice because I'm sort of talking too. But it's the same tone, the same whisper of the voices on the landing that we all heard before of it's a camera. It's a camera. There's many other EVPs of hey, no, yeah, things of that nature. It's that familiar dialect of sort of Irish, sort of, you can't really pinpoint it, but there's a dialect there. but it's inserting in, like I said, the markings on the door in EVP, in addition to the markings on the truck, I mean, it's not far-fetched to say that the two are somewhat related, because we left the house. This is somebody's truck. This is not even my truck. We film it. It's verifiable that we went to the store. It's about 30 minutes in between house to store, store back to house. And you can't make this stuff up in regards to, I mean, Steve and Dawn looked at the markings, and they're identical, and there's a two-year difference between the events in my office and these new markings on a cover of somebody's truck that I do not own. I'm not a signature. I'm not an analysis. I don't work for Quantico. I'm not with the FBI, but you can visually look with your own eyes and execute common sense that these markings are identical.
Guys, we're just about out of time. 2 hours flies by, but I wanted to give each of you about 30 seconds each for some final comments. So how about you first, Don?
Sorry, Jeremy.
Oh, yeah, final comments.
Final comments. Well, you know, we're still putting a report together. It's a very large report. It's going to be available shortly. There's also a book which will due out at the end of the year regarding specifics of Keith's case. And Don is also working on a documentary. More details can be obtained from phenomenaprojects.tv. website, along with other things that we've been involved in, and keep up to date with what's going on and with the Keith Linder case as well, because like I say, there always seems to be more information that seems to be popping up through the analysis that we're doing.
The ghost victim experiment.wordpress.com as well, and Steve's website is zoharstargate.com, zoharstargate.com. I'm afraid, gentlemen, we are out of time, but I want to thank you all for being on the program.
Always a pleasure, Jeremy. Thank you.
That is Keith Linder, that is Steve Mara, and that is Don Phillips. And until I talk to you next weekend, friends, on this Saturday night, 7 Pacific, 8 Mountain, 9 Central, 10 Eastern, my guests will be Grant Cameron and Bob Mitchell, Disclosure, Hillary and the ETs, and so much more. Good night.